Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. It's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. And I'm David Todd from thehammerspeaks.com. Dave, welcome to our post-NFL season hangover. I know it's a 24-365 job a year for you, and we're going to go into the combine and the draft, but the season's over. And as luck would have it, I hear maybe your servers are causing you some problems down there.
Yeah, got a little bit of server problems this morning, and I think a lot of it's traffic related. It's been a busy off season thus far, ever since the Steelers season ended, and I think that has a lot to do with it. So if anybody's been trying to get to SteelersDepot.com, today, I apologize. I'm working on it. We'll get that up as soon as possible.
Okay, well let's get into the news of the day. And as the last 24 hours have brought news fast and furious. And let's kind of go with the topic that we haven't obviously discussed, because it just broke this morning, and I saw you were maybe the first guy to have the news after your buddy from the Carroll County Times. It looks like Wesley Saunders is going to get suspended from September 1st for the first four games of the NFL season next year, assuming he makes the roster, for use of performance-enhancing drugs. What's your initial reaction?
Well, at first we didn't know if it was what type of drugs. It was rumored to be drugs. I think it's come out, as you said now, performance enhancing. This is a guy that had some baggage with him. You know, I mean, let's face it. The kid was suspended his senior year at South Carolina for, kind of illegal lying to NCAA investigators about, contact with an agent and all. This suspension would lead me to believe that maybe this was not his first kind of run-in either. As well. So, four games, that's a quarter of the season, David. And this is a kid, when you look at the Steelers tight end positions, you got Heath Miller going to be turning 30 this season. You got David Johnson, who's a restricted free agent and really not a full-fledged, tight end per se. We have to start thinking now, A, is Wesley Saunders' roster spot safe? And B, does tight end become a position somewhat of need in the draft?
To answer your first question, absolutely not. He has just jeopardized that in a big way. We'll get into the Todd Haley stuff, but certainly in the offense that Bruce Arians was running, you needed multiple tight ends, and not having a guy available for four games, would be a big impediment toward making the roster. So I imagine it's going to be the same under Todd Haley. Wes Saunders, we had a chance to interview him. He's on Twitter frequently. Obviously, we haven't seen him on Twitter yet today, commenting on any of this. I'm sure his lawyers and everybody else are encouraging him not to do anything along those lines. But, it's disappointing. I don't want to pass judgment without knowing all the facts. And at that point, I probably don't want to pass a lot of judgment again either. These are short careers. Guys want to play in the NFL. They know the consequences of their actions. If they do something like this and they get nailed, it costs them a lot of money. And in this case, it might cost them his career. Now, I'm sure if it weren't to work out with the Steelers or whatever, that he'll get other chances. And it's obviously important for him that he gets a chance to fully participate in training camp, the OTAs, in the preseason game. So that will go a long way in deciding kind of how things work out. But, I don't know, Dave. Let me ask you this. Is there a rule that it's not a one-strike type of deal on this? Or is it, my understanding, or I guess I thought, not that I had read it anywhere, was this is a thing that, they teach these guys coming into the league, you get caught with performance-enhancing drugs, it's one strike and you pay the penalty.
It very well could be, David. I'm not up on the suspension rules, especially coming out of the CBA. I think it used to be, you test positive and then you go into the program, and then the second, I think, if memory serves me, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I thought the second is then when it justified a suspension. Now, we'll have to research that, of course. But, you know, regardless of first or second, it's not a good sign. You know, these kids have got to understand that you can't put in things. And I understand sometimes, you know, a friend of a friend says, hey, take this. And, you know, maybe an ingredient in there is on the ban list and all. But, hey, your body is your moneymaker in the NFL. And you better know damn sure what you're putting in it and all. So, I mean, I'm with you. I don't want to pass judgment on the kid. I mean, it's disheartening news to hear. And hopefully there's a good explanation on it. But it is what it is at this fact, and it's a four-game suspension, and it's a guy that was an undrafted free agent on a roster that's short tight ends.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, not much to add to that. I'm not sure, Dave, how many Steelers over the course of, you know, how long this policy has been in place. I don't remember a lot of guys in the Steeler organization running up against this.
Boy, I can't remember either. Not off the top of my head. I know there have been some, I think, but not in recent years to my memory. Of course, my memory is not as good as what it used to be. But you know, it'd be interesting. I mean, evidently the Steelers have verified the report. Won't go into specifics. That's nothing new there. So,
and the third part about this is something that this takes forever to go through the system. And this very well could have happened in September or October, and now it's just gone all the way through all the channels that need to be have it go through, and the appeals and everything like that. So, you know, this could certainly have been around for a long time.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, I think if you look back, who was it? Trent Williams and Fred Davis, was it last year for the Redskins, I think, or maybe it was the year before, but I think they just got off punishment from multiple failed drug tests. You know, this is something. I mean, I guess rephrase your question to me.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, it wasn't really a question. I was just saying, you know, this could have been around for a long time. So, you know, we don't know if this happened. You know, all of a sudden the lockout's over and, you know, he's taking stuff not thinking the lockout's going to be over, and he gets tested September 15th and it comes up positive, and he might have been able to play the whole season with this hanging over his head.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, he very well, I guess, could have been one of those surprise testings maybe at the end of the year. I don't know when they schedule these things. I would think during the season is when you would get tested, although, you know, because a lot of these guys go home or whatnot and can't be – you can't track them down and do a drug test then, I wouldn't think. So maybe if this was a kind of an exit end of the year drug test for him, and then now we're just all of a sudden getting the results and the decision.
Well, I, you know, that's what I'm saying. I don't think it is because of how long the legal aspect of it takes. I'm guessing it happened in September or October, but you know, we'll see if we hear anything more about it. But let's go on to the bigger news of late yesterday afternoon, and you were again one of the first guys to pick this up with a report coming out of Kansas City that you had up on your blog around 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, 4:30, that Todd Haley looks like he is going to be the guy who's the offensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers come right now, going forward, taking the spot of Bruce Arians.
Yeah, you know, Albie Oxenrider, you know, WPXI sports director and all, he had on Friday that, you know, he was hearing that Haley was a leader in the clubhouse. And I, you know, I even tweeted Albie. I said, boy, I find that hard to believe. You know, I wasn't discounting his report.
Sure.
It was more of like, man, you know, I kind of thought, you know, I was with a few other people. I thought maybe the Haley interview was more of a cordial you know, favor maybe to Dick Haley, maybe to help circulate the name of Haley back around there. Depending on who you kind of listen to now, maybe that was the way that was intended to be. Maybe Haley impressed during the interview. You know, we don't know. You know, it's all speculation as far as that point goes. But what we think we know, at least, you know, has been verified by numerous sources now, is that Haley will indeed be the offensive coordinator going forward. And even though I had him number five on my list of potential candidates, and you know, he was one of five that were obvious, you know, links back to the Steelers organization. And I think I said in previous podcasts, I kind of grit my teeth with that. He's not a guy. I mean, I've been in the Randy Feetner corner you know, ever since the news on Arians was announced. But, you know, Haley, he's an abrasive dude. And he wouldn't have been my first choice. There's definitely going to be some fireworks on the sideline. You know, if you look back at the instances with Haley with the Chiefs and with the Cardinals, you know, the obvious blow-ups he had with Anquan Boldin. Kurt Warner was very animated with him at times on the sideline. And then even as early as the Matt Castle incident with the Chiefs last season. So this is an in-your-face kind of guy. And I just kind of wonder how that's going to mesh with Roethlisberger right now.
Yeah. So here's my take, Dave. I got asked this last night. And again, let's be very clear. You and I talk about a lot of stuff, and we can have a lot of opinions when we're watching games about, you know, as we've talked about all year long, how people manage the clock, how the Steelers staff uses their personnel, the play calling and things like that. When it comes into hiring people on the coaching staff that you and I have never dealt with directly, you know, we're speculating a lot here and don't mean to suggest that we have more than, you know, we read a lot of stuff, but we don't know these people personally. So caveat everything I say with that, and I know you feel the same way. Now, obviously, Haley's abrasive personality is well known, and there are people out there. Jason Whitlock wrote a column about this about a year ago when they were going into their first-round playoff game against the Ravens, talking about how Todd Haley is a nice guy, likes him away from the game, but covering him, he's an abrasive jackass who really, you know, maybe has a little bit of an ego issue because he never played the game and maybe feels a little bit insecure about that and wants to constantly show he's in an authoritative position. Having said that, in the same article, Whitlock talks about Scott Pioli and says this guy might have the biggest ego of anybody you've ever met. He's a jackass as well, and it's a combustible mix. And then he goes on to talk about having Charlie Weiss there and all of that. And so we know the conflicts we've seen with Kurt Warner on the sidelines with Arizona. We've seen it now in Kansas City, and he got fired. And you have a guy who's now 45 years old this month. He grew up in Pittsburgh. His father has ties to the organization. I'm sure he has unbelievable respect for the Rooney family and all the things they did for his dad while he was here. And it's not like Todd Haley's getting his last chance here, but anybody who you talk to or read about who has dealt with Scott Haley will tell you a couple things. A, that he is that abrasive personality, and he's not looking to make friends. But B, he is all about winning football games, and he is a creative, intelligent football mind. And at the end of the day, I guess if you're going to pick, you'd like to have them both. But if you're going to pick one, you'd much rather have the second than the former.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, you know, for me to sit out here right now and say, oh, this is an awful hire, you know, oh, we're doomed, you know, it'd be idiotic to do that, not knowing how he's going to interact with the staff, with Roethlisberger, with the other players on the roster. It's a curious hire, A, because, you know, coming out of the outside the organization, so to speak, B, because of his kind of personality that he has. And, you know, but I will say this about him. He has shown in the past that he's able to adapt, to personnel pretty quickly.
Yes.
You know, and just because he's last on the list or something of myself, and I want to reiterate, I'm not over here banging the table that, oh, man, this is going to go south. You know, quickly, if you look back at his numbers, which I have up on Steelers Depot, unfortunately, I'm not able to access those right this moment of his stats over the year. You know, it's not a lengthy resume, you know, if you don't include, you know, time as the passing, kind of the passing coordinator, so to speak, quote unquote, as a wide receivers coach with Dallas. But, you know, it's been kind of up and down. He's been able to improve the passing game, of course, with the Cardinals and Kurt Warner and Boldin and Fitzgerald there. But, I mean, what a great set of tools that is. But when you go over to the Chiefs, you know, you see where he had the 1 year with Jamal Charles the year before last, I think, Jamal Charles, Thomas Jones, where they were right up tops as far as a running team goes. So is this a guy that if given the tools, you know, at both running back and receiver and quarterback, is he a guy that's going to be able to provide balance and keep both of those you know, where they need to be. I mean, there's no doubt that they have the talent as far as receiver goes and running back. Here's the thing that I'm seeing also, I have seen on Twitter since Haley's name has been announced, so David, is people are automatically wanting to throw in kind of a safety net now for Haley. They're saying, well, you know, we have to remember that the offensive line, you know, has been dinged up, and they need to fix that offensive line first. Whereas, you know, Bruce Arians was not given, you know, that luxury of that excuse, so to say. Now, not saying that Bruce Arians did not have his faults. I mean, I think when you look at the red zone, when you look at the scoring, you know, that's where your problems was. But hey, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I posted this in an article last night. There is no grace period for Todd Haley. He's got to come in and hit the ground running. You know, he will not be allowed to go, you know, 8-8 or 9-7. You know, that's just not going to be acceptable. He's going to have to come in right off the bat. He'll have the long, OTA sessions and mini camps now to get his, what he wants done installed. But, hey, you know, the clock's ticking.
The clock is ticking. Look, Todd Haley's going to come in here and he's going to get exactly the same amount of grief or hell or whatever you want to call it that Bruce Arians got. He's not going to get any hall passes. I think the fact that this isn't a universally endorsed hire in the sense that, you know, he's not an internal guy. It's not something that people necessarily thought saw coming. And because he kind of had a fall from grace, not only in Kansas City, but a little bit in Arizona, that people are going to be skeptical, and that's fine. Look, it's the nature of the fans to look at these things, critique these things as best they can, and you know, at the end of the day, the proof will be in the pudding. I think it'll be more interesting to see if we notice any kind of you know, tactical shift, if you will, game planning shift, in terms of the little bit of conversation that there has been out there that possibly Art Rooney the second wants to have the Steelers get a little bit more into the, ground and pound type situation and be a little bit more of that kind of football team. I don't think that we're going to see that, but that will be the more interesting thing. And then we'll see what kind of offensive philosophy he brings, which really, we're not going to know. I don't know how much of that we'll see in the preseason, but, that'll be the interesting stuff, and that'll come through interviews with players and as they talk to the receivers and the OTAs and the mini camps and the things that they're trying to implement. I think that'll be the interesting stuff to see kind of which way this offense is going to be headed in 2012.
And I don't think we really know based on the track. Now, really, you have to discount the season that he had, that Haley had with the Chiefs last year, all those daggum injuries he had. Jamal Charles second week, of course, losing Matt Castle, I think around officially like week 9 or so, 10, something like that. Tony Moyaki, the tight end, he really had his back up against the wall. It is going to be interesting to see, and I think we will get a good idea in preseason, though, because you know, this is a guy that's got to make sure that all the cylinders are clicking and running his offense in the preseason, whereas, you know, maybe the Steelers would have done, you know, more on the side of evaluating talent, I guess, more in the past, especially in the first two games or so. I really think you want to make sure if, you know, depending on how many changes that we see, and that's another question we got to ask is, you know, will this be a full, flat-out dump of the playbook and terminology, or will, because he has more time, with the OTAs and the mini camps and all, you know, will he still, you know, kind of institute some of the same things that Bruce Arians and, of course, before him, Ken Whisenhunt kind of had in the offense to kind of make the transition going forward. If I know Todd Haley, though, he's going to scrap it all and start from scratch, so to speak. He's going to be in your face, and I think abrasiveness is exactly maybe what the Rooneys kind of want. More of I don't want to say kind of a Bill Cowherish, even though Bill Cowher, you know, was not afraid to kind of, you know, stick that chin out there and kind of get in faces. But Haley is more than animated on the sideline, more so than any of the coordinators that the Steelers have had you know, of course, Dick LeBeau being there for years, and then Arian's the last, whatever, 4, 5, 6 years or whatever, he's been around as well. Now, we've seen Sean Coogler, though, kind of, you know, the offensive line coach, get in some people's faces before. But it's going to be interesting to see how Ben and his personality handles this at his age, you know, going forward with what. Hey, all I can say is this, is you're going to see this on camera, some of these run-ins.
Well, you know, and, you know, everybody's assuming it's going to be bad. What if he and Ben hit it off and you know, he wants to open the offense up and do things that Ben's going to like? I mean, you know, we talk about Ben and his relationship with Arians, but, you know, Ben hasn't had a lot of different offensive coordinators or sets in Pittsburgh. I mean, since Tomlin's been here, Arians has been his guy. And now, you know, look, maybe, you know, everybody's just assuming things are going to be worse. Maybe it's going to be great. Maybe, you know, he and Ben learn that they got a lot in common, and they look at the game through the same prism, and it's the best thing that ever happened. So, like you said, we'll see how this plays out, but certainly a little bit surprising, from the guys we've discussed and where we are to get to Todd Haley today, probably being announced today or tomorrow as the Steelers OC.
And, you know, when you start looking at the list dwindling down there, you know, you had Randy Feetner, or at least I did have him up top. The unfortunate situation with Kirby Wilson, we will never know now probably if indeed he was in line for the offensive coordinator position. Then you had Tom Clements, who you know, at Green Bay. We knew that this guy was the odds-on favorite to be promoted to the offensive coordinator with the Green Bay Packers. There were some reports that Tom was indeed interested in Clements. We might never really 100% know that for sure. The Jim Caldwell thing, he was not a favorite on many's list. You know, there were reports that he interviewed with Tomlin. There was also reports that Hugh Jackson maybe, you know, was in the mix there. And then, of course, you have Todd Haley. Outside of that, you know, and the timing of everything that's happened, you know, really what else was left out there, you know, for the Steelers to actually go after?
Well, I, you know, I don't buy into that in the sense that, you know, there are 32 offensive coordinator jobs in the NFL, and any guy in college, most any position coach in the NFL would take that job. You know, we saw Mike Tomlin went from a secondary coach to a defensive coordinator in 1 year and then straight to a head coach. I mean, we see this. We see guys move. If you identify young, talented guys, I think they're out there. To think that they're not, I think is silly. But certainly we didn't hear the names. And if Tomlin did interview a bunch of guys in this process, they'd congratulate the Steelers for doing a good job of keeping that under wraps.
Yeah, most definitely, and I would agree with that, and you know, I have to admit, you know, it's unlike, excuse the dog there.
That's all right.
I will admit when they put up the notice up on Steelers.com that they officially, you know, were interviewing Haley, that's to me, of course, we haven't seen in several years since they've been looking for an offensive coordinator, but that struck me kind of odd that they would be that open about that, and that perhaps threw me for a loop a little bit, that this might have been more of an effort to, you know, just kind of a courtesy type interview and all like that. You know, one thing that we've seen with Haley, you know, dating back Kansas City most recently, is he's not afraid to do a running back by committee. There will be no favorites on the roster of the Pittsburgh Steelers as far as Haley goes in my eyes. I mean, and this comes down to running backs Rashard Mendenhall and Isaac Redmond as well, too. You know, and there's already worries about Mendenhall being healthy for the start of camp and all like that. So, you know, we could see a full-blown running back, you know, controversy, so to speak, I guess, or competition, I should say, from the get-go in camp. And it's not, you know, I don't think it's above Haley to use both of them this year. You know, looking back at his use of tight ends, it really, you know, doesn't seem like he's been overly aggressive as far as that goes. He has used the running backs out of the backfield, I think, a little bit more than the Steelers have over the years. That'll be a welcome sight to, you know, to some of the fan base as well. You know, but you know, I guess to wrap all this up, David, you know, he wasn't my guy, but it doesn't mean that this can't work. So, you know, we're going to have to take a wait and see approach on this. And, you know, and see it firsthand. I'm not going to poo-poo the move just to poo-poo it, you know.
Yeah, right. That's it. And that's how I feel as well. So Others, not a lot of other Steeler news, and we're, you know, this will be one of the quieter months for the organization once they get this Haley thing out of the way and get things settled down, because then it really gets into the scouting as they go through the process. The combine comes up in Indy in a couple weeks, and that'll be the focus of the staff to get out there to, you know, have guys then come in for interviews, the 30 players that they're allowed to have, as well as the players within the within their designated area, which will include Pitt, Penn State, West Virginia, those types of schools, and then it's into the draft. So, but you know, let's not completely ignore what happened on Sunday, although it has been discussed ad nauseum since, you know, midnight Sunday night. An entertaining game, an interesting game, a game again where decisions by coaches certainly impacted how the last couple of minutes played out. What's your take?
It was an okay game. I thought it was kind of sloppy, you know. And hey, let this be known too. I left the house to actually go to a daggum Super Bowl party, if you can believe that.
Nice.
Yeah, I really did enjoy myself. You know, I'm the guy that sits in front of the TV and doesn't talk to anybody and gets mad when people who obviously are there to more socialize than anything. But that aside, it was an okay game. You know, the last quarter was obviously the most exciting. A couple things struck me odd. You know, as far as what the Patriots did on both offense and defense, it really didn't see them mix up the packages, personnel packages, up as much as I thought they would or they have over the, you know, the final part of the season there. And another thing on defense is, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I didn't see Julian Edelman out there in that kind of the extra defensive back role as well too. You know, both teams, you know, did fairly well though at not giving up the big play. I don't have it in front of me, but I think the Giants only had two or three explosive plays on offense, and the Patriots only one or two of over 20 yards. So I think it was obvious, even though Rob Gronkowski, who we both highlighted, you know, pregame, that he was going to play, you know, how that ankle was going to hold up in this game was going to be an important factor in this game. And I think we both can agree that that kid was not 100%. I don't think he played the snap count that he normally plays either going forward. There were a lot of drop passes, particularly the Wes Welker pass late in the game that, you know, probably could have sealed that game up for the Patriots there. Brady was not 100%. You know, he had his moments in the game, although he was kind of under pressure. But, you know, the big key thing that everybody's kind of talking about is Bill Belichick allowing the Giants to score basically at the end there, and Ahmad Bradshaw kind of moonwalking back into the end zone after he realized what had just happened there. To me, that was the right call to make. I don't know how you feel about it, but he saved himself a timeout, I believe, there, and he got the ball back in his offense hands.
Well, I'll look at it like this, Dave. I think it was the right call to make. One of the questions is, after they get the first down, and they've got first down on 7 when Hakeem Nicks goes out of bounds, which, you know, I'm sure if he could do that again, he would have fallen down once he got past the first down marker, but he's fighting for that first down. So the Patriots did the right thing trying to channel him out there. But why didn't the Pats let him score on first down?
Yeah, that's an obvious question there. Maybe they, maybe they just wanted one play to give the defense a chance to make a play.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a simple answer there, and that's right. But you would think if they had let him score there, and it's a minute five left with two timeouts, life's a lot better for the Patriots offensively with that extra timeout. So, you know, we're not going to know whether it plays out differently. But, you know, if we're going to question things, that's what I would question. And then the other thing I would say is Ahmad Bradshaw, you know, it's now clear that nobody said anything to Ahmad Bradshaw about not scoring until he had the ball in his hands and Peyton and Eli Manning is talking to him as he's going through the line of scrimmage. That's tough decisions to make, and I'm not saying necessarily the Giants did the right or the wrong thing. Had he gone down at the one-yard line there without having Tom Coughlin tell him to do that, I wonder if there would be any backlash from Tom Coughlin that they wanted to score there. Now, there's a lot of talk about if they had done that, you know, what they could have done is if he goes down there on second down, they could then try to score on third down, and they would have maybe not chewed up much more clock, but they would have forced the Patriots to use their last timeout. So, you know, I think there are things that could have been done better on both sides, but I'm just a little bit, you know, if it's hard to, you know, you don't want to crush the winners because they won the game, but if Tom Coughlin wasn't prepared for what the Patriots might do, it's not clear to me that he was like, oh, let's get a touchdown no matter what. I don't know that they thought about or envisioned the scenario where the Patriots were going to let him score, and if that were going to be the case, how they should and would react. So I think Bradshaw went in there without guidance otherwise until he's 2 yards through the line of scrimmage, and then it's tough to make, you know, tough to make those decisions on the fly.
Yeah, David, you know, I think Coughlin said even after the game, though, that that it might have been his fault for not covering that scenario there. But on the flip side, I think Bradshaw had even said in one of his interviews that that's something that they kind of discuss, you know, whether or not it was for, you know, in practices leading up to the game. But at some point, you know, during the season, you got to think that that was discussed. I think everybody was more shocked than anything there. I think Bradshaw was shocked by the parting of the Red Sea. The Patriots defense, I think, who was it? Spikes was not happy. The linebacker for the Patriots not happy to hear that. You know, hear that call to let them score there. Because I mean, let's face it, a lot of these guys have never heard for that to be called probably in their entire football career to let a team score. It is curious on the first down call that you know, if you're going to let them do it, why not let them do it there? You know, and you know, were the Giants guaranteed to kick on third down? I think you almost have to. You know, you got to give yourself in case of a bad snap or something like that goes there. But I mean, Dejan Kovacevic had an article up later that night saying something about the death of defense and all like that, how both coordinators basically, or both head coaches, showed that they don't trust their defenses. You know, do you see this more as a situational thing here?
Yeah, I didn't agree with his article, so let me just leave it at that. Yeah. I, you know, I don't think it was like the game was 21-17. It's not the death of defense, and you know, you had a late touchdown. So no, I didn't agree with what he wrote.
Yeah, I really didn't either. I mean, I know it's kind of sensational, and I know it's his job to do, but you know, this is the biggest game. I mean, if this is a Week 4 game, you know, maybe you don't let the team score there. Although with Belichick, you know, anything's possible there. But I mean, this is a Super Bowl. I mean, do you really want the game to end with a shot of your quarterback not getting the ball? I mean, I think he would have got the ball back because, you know, if you look at the transformation, let's say it was after the Knicks first down, it was 1st and 7 with 1:09 left, and Bradshaw went up the middle for 1 yard, and then the timeout's called. So you're down to 1:04 with New England, I believe, with one timeout left. If you run that play, let's say it takes 5 seconds to get him down, and then they burn their timeout there. So now you're just under a minute, but the Patriots are forced to burn their last timeout. Then you're on third down. I suppose, you know, who knows? I suppose the Giants could have, you know, had Eli kind of take a knee to burn another, you know, 30-something seconds off the clock and then kick on fourth down. To me, it was just a giant chess match of both head coaches in the biggest game of the year.
Well, that's the interesting decision there. Let's say, you know, let's say we have the scenario we did, and Bradshaw actually does kneel down there at the one, and the Patriots call timeout. Let's say they're 55 seconds left. If you're the Giants, would you rather try to score the touchdown there and have a 4-point lead and be kicking them the ball with 50 seconds left and no timeouts with a 4-point lead? Or would you rather run that down and kick the field goal and have 15 seconds left and a 1-point lead?
Oh, wow. I think I'd rather have the touchdown. I want them to have to score the most points to, you know, I want them to score the most points. So I'm going for the touchdown.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer to this. And as I sit here and think about it, the only thing I'm thinking is if they have no timeouts and they're on their own 20 with no timeouts, I think it's virtually impossible they get a field goal attempt off. So essentially, I think it's they got to score a touchdown either way. So I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking about this as we talk. I haven't really thought about it a lot, but I'm thinking I'd rather have them the ball on their own 20 with 15 seconds left. And because, you know, just they have to have a lot of things go right to get out of bounds and get the field goal unit on. They could probably only run two plays before they have to try it. So I think I might take the field goal. But, you know, the obvious caveat is if you don't score the touchdown on third down, you're going to try the field goal anyway. So, maybe you try to score the touchdown and see if you get it and see how the other team reacts.
Yeah, I mean, you're using the field goal as a safety net there in lieu of taking time off the clock.
Yeah.
So I mean, I could definitely see that. And as you say, I mean, I'm trying to score the touchdown for the sheer fact that it forces them to score a touchdown if I do score on third down. And then at that same time, as you say, let's see, if it was 104 when the second down play was run and they stopped them, they're going to use their timeout. So we're, let's say, 55 seconds on third down. I run another play and I don't score at that point. And who's to say then Belichick opens up the gates again, you know? It's really an interesting situation there, and it's hard to say. Yeah, I think I play the percentages, and I want them to score a touchdown to beat me, even if they get the ball back with, say, 55, 50 seconds left with no timeouts.
Yep. Any other big takeaways from the game? I mean, I think the safety call was a good call. You know, the pass from Manning to Manningham has been talked about forever, and it was a great throw and catch. You know, everybody's talked about the Welker drop and some of the other drops on the last drive. But anything else that maybe the mainstream media didn't cover that jumped out to you?
I tell you, you know, when Manningham ran that wrong route, it looked like late in the game, and you could see Eli kind of grimace and because the ball was looked like the ball was thrown to the spot, maybe kind of a back shoulder throw on the right side of the field there. Eli went right back to Manningham on the next play for a first down. Now, I don't think it was the play that was, the big play there, but I think it was a move the sticks type of play on there. And that just, to me, that showed great confidence, Eli sticking with the kid Manningham to do it. I want to say it was the first and 10 call at the 50-yard line when the Giants had the ball. If memory serves me correct, I might be wrong. It might have been a little bit earlier than that. But it was the play immediately after it looked like Manningham had ran the wrong route. Eli went right back to him, with a great play. And then, of course, the big play to him down the sideline. And Manningham really, at first, when I first saw that play, I thought maybe he didn't have control of the ball as he went out of bounds. And Belichick really had no choice really but to challenge it. Really nothing to lose at that point, in my opinion. But he come to find out he could use that timeout later on. But I guess I was more I like the pass rush. I think the pass rush of the Giants is not getting enough credit in this game that they had on Brady there. It just looked like the Patriots were kind of flat and really hurt without Gronkowski overall. And I didn't like the use, they'd been using Edelman leading up to this game so much in the secondary, why you wouldn't do that again, in the Super Bowl.
Yep. I didn't have a strong feeling on the game either way. I thought the Pats would win, and in both Super Bowls, it's clear that either team could have won with a little bounce one way or the other. But kudos to the Giants, and certainly Eli Manning is now in the conversation, I think, with Roethlisberger, Brady, Peyton Manning, Breeze, and Aaron Rodgers as, the elite quarterbacks in the NFL, kind of maybe supplanting Phillip Rivers from his own draft class as being kind of the group who's now the top five or six guys in the league. He did it. He got it done all the way through late in the season and the postseason, and kudos for him. I was not a believer coming into the year. I thought he was an average quarterback at best, and I think you have to say he's much more than that now. So good job on them winning the game. Certainly New England can look at these two Super Bowls and say five balls on the ground, didn't get any of them. So that's disappointing for them. But the Patriot fans who say, with a couple breaks, we could have won five, you got to remember that they won three by a total of 9 points. So things could have gone the other way. And the ones they won, they didn't. They got the wins well-deservedly. And, you know, good on the Giants for getting the win. And the Steelers will play the NFC East next year. And there's already, you know, we know this division is always the most hyped division in football coming into the season. The major markets there with Philadelphia, Washington, and Dallas. But there's no question that you've got a talented Eagles team that's going to do a little bit of shuffling of the deck, but play very well down the stretch. You've got a Giants team that's a Super Bowl champion, and you've got a Cowboys team that always seems to be able to do some things. We'll see if they can figure out their problems defensively, but they've got some talent there. And, you know, the Redskins, if they can find a quarterback, seem to be turning things around a little bit. So the Steelers, well, you know, it won't be kind of the road they've had the past couple of years. Certainly this past year playing the NFC West, it'll be a little bit tougher road going through the NFC East.
Let me ask you, Peyton Manning or Eli Manning, assuming both are 100% healthy, who's your guy?
Well, it's hard with a year of not playing to look at it too seriously, but I'll take Peyton over Eli still. It's hard, you know, Peyton may be the best quarterback in my mind to ever play the game. I think he can make all the throws. He's incredibly bright. He's probably a tad less mobile than his brother, and we saw mobility with Tom Brady certainly makes a difference. I mean, that's the key to beating the Patriots, is making Tom Brady have to move, flushing him from the pocket. But I just think it's hard. Well, he's still a non-retired player to pick against Peyton Manning.
What about Eli Manning, Tom Brady?
Well, I'm going to take Tom Brady, and I think the most interesting conversation would be right now, if you asked not Pittsburgh fans, but if you ask around the league, whether you take Ben Roethlisberger or Eli Manning. Eli's now got two Super Bowls in the past 4 years. Ben's got two Super Bowl appearances in the last four, and he's got two wins under his belt as well. But, there's not a right answer, so I'm not looking for anybody to tell me the right answer, but I think that's an awfully good one.
And like you said, when we lead up to this Giants Steelers game next year,
somebody might bring that question up, you think?
yeah, there'll be a whole lot of debate of where you rank these guys, in the top five or top six or whatever have you. You know, hey, that draft class is looking pretty good right now, isn't it?
Yeah, I tell you, you know, who would have thought that Philip Rivers be sitting there on his hands, kind of not making the playoffs the past couple of years, and you know, the other two guys each have two rings, and let's not forget Matt Schaub, who, you know, might have been in contention for getting a ring himself if he hadn't gotten hurt.
And, you know, the report, of course, resurfaced again. Well, we knew the story, but how Roethlisberger really was very close to becoming a New York Giant if that trade between the Giants and the Chargers doesn't go down. So, boy, could you – I mean, what would that have done for us? I mean, can you envision Philip Rivers – would we have drafted Philip Rivers down there at that point? You know,
yeah, sure. I think we'd have a quarterback. You know, I'll take any one of the three. Look, I think Rivers is a good quarterback. He had a tough year, but those are three damn good quarterbacks. They're three of the best 10 quarterbacks in the league, right there, coming out of the front of that draft class.
Isn't it funny how one little decision, like a trade going through, can. You can say this about any draft, but I mean, really, with one player basically involved here, basically, or two, Eli Manning and Philip Rivers, there, how really it kind of formed the future for the Steelers over the next, you know, several years, and still going right now with Roethlisberger. So it's interesting how you can back up to one point.
And I'll throw one more topic out there for you. For those who haven't seen it, Mel Kiper on ESPN.com, great, interesting, graded kind of the. Last year's draft, the performance, and he picked out the top 20 rookies based on performance. I think out of the top 12 picks in the draft, 7 or 8 of the maybe even 9 of the top 12 picks made his top 20 list. But what really caught my eye was the success of the AFC North, excluding the Pittsburgh Steelers, on his list. You had AJ Green at 4 and Andy Dalton at 5, and I don't have this in front of me, so it's off the top of my head. But they were 4 and 5. Jabal Sheard from Pitt, the second-round pick by the Cleveland Browns, was in the top 10. And then Greg Little, their wide receiver, was 20th. And then you had two guys and then Torrey Smith was in there in the high teens, somewhere in the, I think, the 10 to 15 range. And then one of their defensive ends, One of their rookie picks was in their honorable, you know, guys, the next 10 guys list. So you had two guys from all three teams in the AFC North getting a lot of props for their rookie success. Not to say the Steelers had a bad rookie draft class. Marcus Gilbert is a guy who certainly contributed along the way, but interesting to see the other teams getting guys who were certainly going to, and Phil Taylor, excuse me, was also on there from the Browns. So as an honorable mention guy, so they had three guys listed on that list. So it's just interesting to see that it's a very tough division as it is. And if the Browns, you know, put things together and put a quarterback on that team, it might get even tougher as we go forward.
And, you know, it's interesting. The future odds are already out, of course, for the next Super Bowl and all. And I believe the Browns and the Jaguars are down at the bottom at 100-1, you know. So, and this is even after Brad Childress hiring and all like that. So, of course, they got quarterback questions of their own right now going into this season. So it'll be interesting to see if they're the ones that go with RG. You know, RG come, you know, early on in the draft there. I think we all know where Andrew Luck is going on. But, yeah, I mean, the division's going to be tough. And, hey, that's the way I like it. I like the competition. I like beating teams when they're at their best.
And, David, just before we close it up here, I mentioned on Twitter the other day that the Steelers do play the NFC East, and they do have the New York Giants away this coming year. Any chance we see the Steelers and the Giants open the season in New York?
I suppose that's a possibility.
I don't think you'll see Green Bay in that game because they've been in it, you know, now for a couple of years. I think the past 2 years, you're not going to have the Saints probably back in it. You certainly could have the 49ers, but I'm not actually even. They did both win their division, so they'll be on the schedule. So maybe the 49ers are the most likely candidate to open up in San Francisco, in New York for the season opener. But if they decide to go, I'm sure if they decide to go cross conference, the connections between the Rooneys and the Maras and the Steelers and the Giants, that would be a tasty game to open the season next year.
Yeah, it'd be a great storyline, that's for sure. And I think we'll know the definite dates and all like that. I think around April or so, yep. Like that, and all. So of course, the NFL Combine later this month, we'll be all over that as well. The official list of invitees is up as well on the official NFL Combine site. You know, going forward, we're really going to dive into this draft going forward here and now, because that's all that's left to do. And we'll be back on Friday. Maybe we'll have an interview lined up, but you know, it's been a busy offseason, David. We haven't really struggled to have things to talk about this far.
That's for sure. So enjoy the day. Good luck with the servers. Make sure you're following Dave on Twitter. I'm sure if you're a regular listener, you are. You know, it's at Steelers Depot. The website is at SteelersDepot.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Hammer Speaks, and my blog is up. You can find that HammerSpeaks.blogspot.com. But if you Google the Hammer Speaks, you should be able to get there. So great stuff, and we'll look forward to having you back on Friday. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.